This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, most of the news we've had from the United States in recent times has been grim, I suppose is the word, and fraught with the dangers of isolationism of Trump and indeed Ron DeSantis. Bad news, all of them really, and for people worrying about the world and the future, particularly bad news on climate change, for example. But yesterday there was very good news. Last night, the Senate passed the bill that will ensure that there is a deal on the debt ceiling. It's a deal that looked doubtful and had to be closed by this coming Monday. Otherwise, America would have defaulted and the world would have been economically hit catastrophically. So it's a very good news. And we're joined now from Washington by Niall Stanage, associate editor of The Hill newspaper, a very respected newspaper for being not so partisan as other media outlets in America. And Niall is White House columnist also for The Hill. Just before we get to the debt ceiling, Niall, Joe Biden stumbled and fell very publicly last night after making a speech. What can you tell us about what happened and how he is?
Well, he appears to be fine, but it was a very embarrassing moment. Yes. And a moment that will be clearly used against him politically. He was making a speech at an armed services ceremony, and he turned from the podium and tripped. Now, he says he tripped over a sandbag that was seemingly there to hold down either a teleprompter or some sort of equipment. But the point, I suppose, is we've all tripped, everyone can fall sometime, but the problem is not all of us are 80-year-old men running to be reelected. Yes. As president of the United States, and Joe Biden running in that regard with, you know, polling that shows significant public concern about his age. There was an ABC Washington Post poll, Eamon, just earlier this month, saying that 68% of Americans didn't really think he was good and, you know, prepared to serve a second term. He was well enough to serve a second term.
Yes, I mean, and yet this deal that Kevin McCarthy, as Speaker of the House of Representatives, the Republican, our Kevin, or my Kevin, as Donald Trump once described him, and Biden, it does testify to Joe Biden's abilities as a deal maker, which was well known over four decades he spent in the Senate. And indeed, it was probably the reason Barack Obama made him vice president. He is a great deal maker and knows how to work the system.
Yeah, and that has been traditionally a big strength of his. And you mentioned the Obama presidency.
Yes.
During that time, then Vice President Biden was really Obama's emissary to Capitol Hill.
Yes.
Obama, of course, had been a senator, but very briefly before he started running for president. So he didn't really have the deep connections there, nor is Obama by personality or temperament the kind of backslapping old school politician that Biden is. That has pluses and minuses to it. But your point is well made, I think, that Biden is very embedded in that culture of Capitol Hill over the decades that he served as a senator, and that sort of enables him to have a certain facility with the kind of horse trading that goes on and with understanding what people want or what people need from certain deals. And that appears to have stood him in fairly good stead here, even though there is some criticism from the left of his party, just as there's some criticism of Kevin McCarthy from the right of the Republican Party.
Now, for Kevin McCarthy, we in this podcast have occasionally been scathing, and we've asked for his Irish relatives to make themselves known, and they've resisted the temptation. They might now be able to put their heads up above the parapet, because he has delivered something very substantial, in fact, something vital, and something that people doubted that he could deliver. So an upgrade for our Kevin?
Well, certainly a big victory for him, for sure. I mean, the right-wing rebellion against this deal did not reach the scale that some people had envisioned. In the House of Representatives itself, there were more than 300 votes for this and a bit over 100 against, 71 Republicans against, 46 Democrats against. If you had said at the outset of this that that would be the result, McCarthy, I think, would have been more than happy with that. You know, there was significant fear that the right of the Republican Party would capsize the whole deal, and that didn't happen, even though some of them were outspoken critics of it. What basically happened was you had the far left of the Democratic Party splinter off and the far right of the Republican Party splinter off, and Biden and McCarthy were able to drive this deal up the middle. Incidentally, I mean, you had mentioned before about R. Kevin and his Irish roots, and I had been unable to tell you where those roots exactly lay. His great-grandfather was born in Cork, apparently.
Right, so that figures.
A victory for the second set.
Oh, that figures. Cork. They're cute. I mean, I love them. They're great people, but they're cute. They're cuter than you guys in Belfast, I can tell you. And they'd wipe the floor with Dubliners and have frequently. I must say, I lived in Cork for 2 years, West Cork, and it's the most beautiful place, and they're marvellous people, but they're smart enough. Yeah. Now, just to get back to more serious matters, we know it's, 16 or 17 months until the 2024 presidential election in the United States, but the action has started particularly in, well, almost exclusively among Republicans, and Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, who's deemed to be in with a chance of taking on Trump. He has been on tour this week, and Trump, of course, seems to be permanently on tour. He also has been out seeking support. So the Republican race is on, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, the field is not completely set, but definitely getting there. Ron DeSantis was the entrant to that race that everyone had been waiting for, because he is Trump's most serious challenger, according to the opinion polls. Now, as you and I have discussed before, Eamon, Trump has a very significant lead, and in fact, his lead over DeSantis in the polls has increased in the past couple of months, to a very substantial margin indeed, around 30 points in national polls. But DeSantis is a serious figure in the Republican Party. His politics by Irish standards would be very, very right-wing indeed, and he takes a certain glee in involving himself in some of the most combustible issues in this country. But he's in, and he's certainly, at this stage, the most serious rival to the Donald.
And reading some notes that you sent me, Niall, he isn't a good stump performer. Mm. He's rather wooden in many ways. And whilst there isn't a lack of purpose, there is a lack of personality, and he's not sort of people-friendly, as it were, it seems.
No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, there is a certain set of skills that helps you on the campaign trail, a kind of glad-handing. Bill Clinton, for all his other faults, and I don't think you or I are his biggest fan, but he was particularly good at that kind of campaign trail stuff.
Is folksy the word?
Folksy would be a good word for it. I mean, Obama wasn't particularly great at it. He was a great podium speaker, but he was a bit standoffish in sort of up close. DeSantis is more wooden than either of them, and more socially awkward. And people behind the scenes say that about him as well. It's not just that he gets stiffens up in public. He doesn't have much time for small talk behind the scenes. He's not considered, even by people who like his policies, to be particularly over-endowed with personal charm. But he is trying to overcome that by, firstly, there's a lot of money behind him. Secondly, the vigour of his conservative positions. And thirdly, the idea that he's a more electable alternative to Trump.
Yes, and I mean, he wants, and he said in a speech this week, the Republican Party to move more to the right. Now, from where we watch, from our perspective in Europe, it doesn't seem possible that you could get to the right of Donald Trump. But clearly, that's a kind of generalization. On certain things, Trump is almost non-ideological, isn't he?
Yeah, and that's what DeSantis is really getting at. DeSantis is trying to suggest that Trump doesn't have a fixed ideology, which I think is an accurate charge. But yeah. I mean, Trump, while in office, obviously pursued very conservative policies. The issue that DeSantis hones in on in particular, well, I guess there are two. One is the abortion issue. DeSantis signed a 6-week abortion ban in Florida. Yes. Very, very restrictive move. Frankly, unpopular with the electorate at large, but popular, of course, with the so-called religious right, who are quite a formidable force in Republican primaries. Trump, even though he nominated the Supreme Court justices who undid the constitutional right to abortion, has been vague of late as to what exactly he would do, whether he would support a national ban and that sort of thing. He has even been vague on the 6-week abortion ban in Florida, where, of course, Trump lives these days. And DeSantis has hit him on that. The other point, briefly, that DeSantis is hitting Trump on is this weird feud that DeSantis is in with the Disney Corporation. Disney came out against a bill that it considered to be anti-trans that DeSantis had passed. Trump has said that DeSantis's actions in that regard were a political stunt, and DeSantis is jabbing back over that.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Now, another entrant in the race is highly unlikely to become president, but Chris Christie is an interesting Republican. He is a former governor of New Jersey, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. In fact, he beat the Democrats there twice. Mm-hmm. And as a Republican who can beat Democrats, he has his own value. He was close to Trump when Trump first ran for the 2016 presidency. They fell out, but he's in the race now. Is there any significance in it either way?
There is some significance, though I don't think he's a likely winner of the Republican nomination because I think he's too moderate. But the significance of it really is that Christie is entering the race, as far as anyone can tell, specifically as an anti-Trump candidate. And by that I mean many steps further in opposition to Trump than DeSantis or other candidates like Nikki Haley or Tim Scott have positioned themselves. Christie has a very checkered relationship with Trump, which we can go into if you like, although it would take a while. The point is he's now very vehemently opposed to Trump, has described him as Putin's puppet for his attitudes in Ukraine, has called Trump's 2024 campaign a vanity exercise. So Christie, who is a talented debater, seems more likely than anyone else to take Trump on very aggressively, and we'll have to see how that pans out.
Yeah, when do the Republican debates begin?
August.
The nomination debates. So we're not far off.
No, the first debate's August sometime.
Yeah, Trump has stated or hinted that he mightn't enter the first two and let the others fight it out. And the other belief is that the more Republicans, and we know Mike Pence is going to declare next week, the more Republicans that he's got to take on, the more the anti-Trump vote will divide and the better for him.
Yes, exactly. That's right. Because the Trump base is so fervently behind him that it is perceived to be almost impossible to split those people off or to erode their support for Trump. Now, those people who are the absolutely, you know, Trump or die people are maybe 35%-ish of the Republican electorate.
Yeah.
But of course, if the other 65% gets split between, you know, 5-6 credible candidates, then that obviously helps Trump a great deal. Back in 2016, Eamon, that's essentially what happened. It was a 17-person field at the start. Trump was winning primaries with 25-30% of the vote. And once he got rolling, no one could stop him, and no one emerged as a central figure, as the Trump alternative, until it was too late.
No, and among that field was Jeb Bush, who was from the Bush dynasty, as it were, and had been governor, I think, of Florida.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And was regarded as, you know, a favorite at one stage to get the Republican nomination.
Yes, and went nowhere because he was he was perceived as a sort of establishment candidate at a time when the electorate didn't want that. And of course, Trump famously tagged him as low energy Jeb, which,
yes,
like a lot of Trump nicknames, had quite a strong element of truth in it. And that was the end of that. Jeb Bush spent about $100 million on that campaign, and went absolutely nowhere.
Now, the Trump appeal, Niall, he's in trouble again this week because a tape has emerged which is embarrassing for him, particularly for the legal case that's been, or the investigations by the prosecutor from the Department of Justice, Jack Smith, the investigations into the classified material that he held on to and kept at Mar-a-Lago and refused to hand over. He said, and has argued, he didn't know he was doing anything wrong and that he had the power as a president, a former president, to declassify them himself. A tape has emerged showing that that's not what he really believed, that he actually said he couldn't tell the two people that were talking to him, who are writing an autobiography of a horrible person called Mark Meadows, who was last chief of staff on January 6th, 2021, for example, the last Trump chief of staff. And in books I've read about this, he emerges as a weak and rather shallow placeman. However, he's having an autobiography written. This is a grave embarrassment. Trump, 2 weeks ago, was convicted of assault, a sexual assault, on a woman in New York. No matter what happens to him in these sort of matters, there is also stuff about not paying his taxes for 57 years. It doesn't matter, does it, to the guys who like him?
It doesn't appear to do so, no. I mean, certainly after those charges were leveled against him in New York, I'm speaking here of the falsification of business records charges, the hush money case with Stormy Daniels, his poll ratings, if anything, went up slightly in the aftermath of that. The sexual assault thing, just to clarify for any listeners who are wondering why he doesn't face jail time, that was a civil trial in which he was held liable for damages for the sexual abuse of a woman by the name of
$5 million.
Yes, that's correct, for a woman by the name of E. Jean Carroll. And this most latest development is an embarrassment for him. And I mean, you described it very well. It undercuts the central Trump defense. That defense being, well, I declassified everything anyway. The apparent topic under discussion in this tape recording was basically who within the administration wanted to attack Iran and who didn't. And Trump argued that a very senior military person, General Mark Milley.
Yes, and a very respected military person, yes.
Yeah. Trump was basically contending in this conversation that Milley's version of events was wrong. And as far as we know, because this is all based on secondhand reporting, as far as we know, Trump said, in essence, I could show you, you know, this document, but this document would prove my point, but I can't show it to you because it's restricted. If he said that or something like that, it would appear to vaporize the argument that he believed things to have been declassified.
Yes, and he also said this week, and has said on other occasions, that as president, or indeed as a former president, he can declassify things in his mind. In other words, he doesn't need to do anything. He can just think, I'm declassifying this. He actually said this on a number of occasions.
Mm. Bizarre. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm asking you to go ahead to explain to me what the 35% of Republicans, or Americans indeed, who seem to favor him back in the White House, are thinking about a guy who can make decisions in his head, tell nobody until it's convenient.
Yeah, I mean, it is, frankly, an absurd argument, that idea that you can declassify things by thinking them to be declassified, that it would be declassified even if you had not told anyone. I mean, it will not surprise you to learn that there is a whole declassification process. You can't just take, I don't know, spy photos of Iran's nuclear facilities and declassify them in your mind. That's not how it works. You know, the people who support him, I just don't think they care particularly. I mean, one of the reasons I think his support is so rock solid, Eamon, is that it's a peculiar dynamic. I think those people, the absolute diehards, think that any negative information about him is automatically motivated by bad faith or a desire to do him in. And so it is almost instantly discounted by those people.
Yeah, it's a thing that Boris Johnson has as well. No matter how many lies he tells or how many, what shall I call them, not very nice things he does.
Sure.
There's a lot of Tory grassroots people who want him back to lead the party. And I must ask you about the Democrats in all of this, in the light of Joe Biden's unfortunate fall last night. Of course, everyone is happy that he's not suffered any injury, just embarrassment. Where are the Democrats in terms of an alternative to Joe Biden? Because as you said, that people have been asking, even before last night, about, you know, this man will be 86, I think, when his next term as president was over. That's some age. Now, some people, you know, are fine. I mean, Trump, for example, isn't all that younger. But he's not a robust 80, is he?
He's not, no. And in fact, to your point, that poll that I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Biden's fall indicated that the American public at large do acknowledge actually that Trump is more vigorous. I mean, there was a question in that poll, do you think someone has the mental acuity to be president, and Trump scored better than Biden did in that regard. It is a problem for Democrats. The age thing is a concern. One of Biden's saving graces, honestly, is that there isn't a really compelling alternative. Yes. You know, you think back, this isn't a point about health grounds, but you think back to 2008 where Hillary Clinton was the presumed nominee and then Obama came along and he was such a charismatic figure and all of that. There isn't anyone approximating that in Democratic politics at the moment. Vice President Kamala Harris has quite significant political liabilities.
Yes.
Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, is maybe shaping up himself as an alternative, but there are doubts about him as well. He's a sort of stereotypical West Coast rich guy, honestly, who's not perceived to play very well in those key Rust Belt states.
Yes.
The other alternative is maybe Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, who has some political skills, but I've never been all that impressed with Buttigieg.
No, he doesn't have the X factor, the charisma factor, does he? Long-term future for the Democrats looks rather bleak now. And I wonder what you think about this. Should the Republicans take the White House next autumn? Mm. They could have it for quite some time. And America then, in the hands of Trump or DeSantis, it would be, you know, isolationist, possibly, probably.
Mm.
It would also be extremely right-wing. It would be hostile to NATO. It would dump Ukraine overnight. I mean, when Trump was asked in that CNN town hall last week about who he wanted to be victorious in this Russia, in this Putin Zelensky conflict, he said he didn't care. And as for the debt ceiling, he said America should default, which these are extraordinary things to say. I mean, if America defaulted, it would be catastrophic for America and for the rest of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. It would echo instantly through the whole global financial system with terrible effects. It's interesting you raised the point about the length of time Republicans could potentially hold the White House, because one of the arguments that Ron DeSantis is making on this first week on the campaign trail is that if people nominated him and he were elected, he could, of course, serve 8 years, potentially, where Trump would, assuming he doesn't abandon the Constitution, Trump would be limited to one more term, so it would be four more years of Trump. I mean, 8 years of DeSantis, which is what DeSantis is selling, would very significantly move the United States, both on the international arena in the way that you just outlined, and domestically. I mean, DeSantis, for example, took great exception to a academic course in African American history a while ago because he contended that certain things shouldn't be taught. And there's a whole issue in Florida of book bannings and so forth.
Yes.
There's the LGBT issue. So, I mean, 8 years of a DeSantis presidency, or for that matter, 4 years of a Trump presidency, would unquestionably move America in a very, very significant way. And I think to circle back or to connect this to the point where we started off, that's one of the reasons why Democrats and left of center Americans generally are so worried about Biden's age and frailty and political vulnerability.
There's no one else?
No.
Right. Okay, Niall. As always, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm very grateful to you indeed. Niall Stanage, Associate Editor of The Hill and White House columnist for The Hill. We're grateful to Niall, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.